everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Be the Vessel podcast. My name is Daniel, and I am an intuitive psychologist acting as a bridge between Western psychology and the spiritual realm. I interview those called to the healing arts with various ways of knowing, serving, and channeling the most powerful medicine for our collective return to wholeness. If you like what you hear and would like to support the podcast, which is an offering of love, please check out my Patreon page where you can offer support or become a member of the Be the Vessel community with exclusive monthly offerings. Anna Holtzman is a licensed psychotherapist and coach who helps creatives learn how to heal from chronic pain and other symptoms so they can reclaim their energy and pursue their passion. In a past life, or more accurately, earlier in this one, Anna was a disillusioned video editor, working in reality TV and struggling with chronic migraines for over 10 years. Through her own mind-body recovery experience, Anna came into the passionate service she offers now. She works with clients through her courses and group programs, as well as one-on-one. She also publishes a weekly blog and podcast, both titled From Chronic Pain to Passion. I met Anna via email during a crucial transitional point for both of us as we each navigated a separation from the traditional forms of service we were trained in to explore more expansive possibilities for how we show up for others and ourselves, and for how we create lives filled with passion. I am honored to share this episode with Anna as we explore the paths that led us to our initial meeting, as well as where we are now in our individual and collective missions for healing and creation. You can discover more about Anna and her offerings via her Instagram at Anna_Holtzman and her website, annaholtzman.com. Please enjoy this episode with Anna Holtzman, and may it be an invitation, a gift, and a medicine to explore your own passion and create your own life. Hi, Anna. Thanks so much for being here and welcome to the show.
Hi, Daniel. It's really lovely to meet you and get to chat with you, and I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, so happy to have you here. As far as I can remember, we first connected over email through the famed TMS PPD MindBody listserv. And around the time that I was stepping out into the woods on my own, charting my own adventure, and you were doing something similar. So it's cool to circle back around, as I know you've just started your own podcast, and to connect in a deeper way at this stage of each of our journeys. And so the first place I'd like to start, which may seem odd, but it really strikes me, which is how impressive your social media is, at least compared to someone like me, because it's not a natural strength.
That's so funny.
Of mine. And when I just take a look at your Instagram, it's so beautiful.
Oh, and, thanks.
and concise. And you know, I consider that a role that we have a choice to step into under the umbrella of, you know, of our overall service and how we speak our truth and share our message. It's definitely not something I got trained on in graduate school, and I think most people do. I think most people shunned it, or, you know, or kind of looked at you sideways if you were even, I didn't even have an Instagram then. So I'm curious how you got into that side of it, or how you knew at some point that you wanted that to be a part of how you show up for others.
Yeah, I love that. It's not what I was expecting you to ask me about first. And I love that we're talking about that, because as you have witnessed, I'm very much into my Instagram. So like a bunch of different threads to answer that probably. And one is that I did not start out in my professional life as a therapist. I've actually been doing this for a relatively short time as compared to like my adult lifespan and career span. So I roughly started practicing as a therapist, a licensed therapist, in 2019. It was 18 or 19. I think it was 2019. And I've had many different directions in my career. So I started in college, I studied architecture and thought I was going to be an architect and ventured into that world very briefly before that took me into writing and publishing. And I was working at an architecture magazine for a while. And then I segued into briefly like documentary and independent film. Then I learned how to edit. And then I became a reality TV editor Wow. for over 10 years. So I was working in reality TV for quite a while, right before becoming first a life coach and then a therapist.
What and, TV shows? I mean, not that I would yeah. know really, but I'm just curious.
Well, I was doing it for 10 years, so I worked on a lot of different shows, but ones that stand out in my memory are MTV's Made. I don't know if you are familiar like with that.
That sounds familiar.
It's no longer on the air, but it was on the air for a really long time. And it was a show, I worked on a lot of shows that I really did not enjoy, but that was one I did enjoy. And it was all about personal growth, actually. And it's, you know, in its way. So I worked on that show, briefly worked on 16 and Pregnant and Teen Mom, which I only mention because people know those shows.
Wow.
And it's just like a ton of other shows. Black Ink Crew, Alaskan Bush People, Mo Rocca's cooking show, which was a favorite. It's a really wide
amazing.
Span of shows.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that, firstly, because I feel that our collective, our society, is stepping into a new period where we can have and explore many archetypes of who we are, of aspects of our personality, that we are not pigeonholed to one, that although I feel we have a nature, if we can call it that, a sort of something that is in alignment, that we are much more than we think. It's popular to talk about parts work and, you know, parts of ourselves these days. And I think it goes way beyond that into many lives and many incarnations and just aspects of who and what we are in multiple dimensions that we cannot fully grasp in our conscious mind. So the idea that we would just find one job and choose it and not explore all that we're here to do on this planet, I think is going to grow more and more silly, or it's going to seem more and more silly. And to honor the aspect of us that is a creator, an inherent creator, even if you don't necessarily consider yourself that in the more traditional artsy way, that being a human being is to be a creator. So I love, and also just the diversity and exploring different personalities, and it's just a very different world.
Yeah, and also imagine. Like very a lot of kind of traveling between what's considered highbrow and lowbrow worlds, which was really something to navigate identity wise.
Which I think is so important because, at least from my experience, the field of clinical psychology, even though it is a form of service and it's in the healing arts, it has a big ego around
it. Yeah.
And the titles and the training. And
yes.
If you then choose to veer off, as I have, and as you have carved your own path, you get looked at strangely. Honestly, even more strangely than people who are not in the healing arts at all, who might just be like, oh, cool, you're doing this now. Great. But people who are maybe in that profession and have that training are like, what? You're not going to, at least I'm speaking for myself, you're not going to use your title. You're not going to use your license. Like, that's so crazy. It's like, I don't know. Is it? You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I love that. I love that you have that experience.
Yeah. And I guess that, yeah, like, how does that relate to my Instagram? Because it could be a really long tangent that where we never come back to Instagram, too. But I think it relates to Instagram in a couple of ways. One is that I just have a lot of experience working in media. So I love to create media. I love to tell stories. I love to take a complex topic like mind body healing and boil it down into a message that someone can hopefully get in a very short time span, which is, you know, Instagram has a very short attention span. And so that's one aspect of it. But the other, which is part of what I think you were talking about, is that I did not spend years and years and years of my formative, you know, years of my life being indoctrinated with this idea that A, I'm a therapist, you know, and that is my sole identity, and that B, being a therapist means that I've got to be very formal and private and, you know, not be on social media. I was indoctrinated with that for a short period of time when I went back to grad school, but like I was already in my maybe 40s. I was in my late 30s or my early 40s when I went to grad school, and I'd had a lot of different types of professional experiences. And so the idea that, you know, this is the only way things are.
You had some like, protections and experience built up to push back against that.
Yeah. And it's not that I was wholly uninfluenced by it. I was influenced by it. And while I was in grad school, I had had a social media account before that. It wasn't Instagram. I was on Facebook. Anyway, that's not that important. But I was very active on Facebook, not in the way that I am now. Like I use my social media professionally and to, you know, offer educational content. Back when I worked in TV, I used it more as like a political platform and just like a social platform. But I was pretty loud and vocal on Facebook and very opinionated. And when I went into grad school, you know, we were all told like, don't be on social media. Don't reveal anything that your clients might see that, you know, would give them an idea of your personal politics or personal life or whatever. So I was frightened by that. And I use that word intentionally because, as you and I both know, mind-body symptoms have a lot to do with fear. Like fear contracts our bodies. And so there were these kind of veiled or not so veiled threats that were being issued in grad school saying, you know, if you are on social media, then you're bad and you're going to get your license revoked and, you know, whatever, all these kind of direct or indirect suggestions. And so I was kind of frightened of that, and I shut it all down, like made everything super, super private on social media. And it took me a little while. Like I was pretty close to already getting my license when I decided to make my Instagram public again. And once I had my license, I felt much more secure to do whatever the heck I wanted. But before I got my license, I was a little bit scared of like, if someone says I'm doing something that's not professional, you know, maybe I won't get my license. So there was a little bit of a process of readjustment there.
I love that you use the word indoctrinated, because it really, it has the word doctor in it, sort of.
Oh, yeah.
And so it has that authoritative component, that title that can often be wholly respected and wholly feared. It speaks so much to the conditions that we grow up in individually, from our lineage, from our family, from the systems we're a part of, to the systems we then choose to participate in. And grad school and that kind of thing was absolutely one. It was one that was typically made more intentionally, and yet in service of ideally stepping into an aspect of our own power, we tend to give our power away to this authority that we are expecting to train us in ways that we don't even really know what that means. We're like, yeah, we're going to get the information, but I'm going to be like them. I want to mimic these people, these professors who have likely ideas, at least some of which that are fairly outdated and could not possibly understand all of the complexities that the world is going through and stepping into, especially over the past few years. So,
and if they're working in academia, they're also like infused with a lot of fear of, you know, making a misstep and losing their position in that very hierarchical pecking order as well.
100%. What you realize is like that academic world is its own indoctrinated world and is sheltered in its own way and has its own conditions and biases and beliefs. It's not to be dismissive of it. It's just to recognize that every system is that way and we have to come to our own truth. That's the way. That's what I've taken from my own mind-body journey. It's what I've taken from my life is no one is going to speak our truth for us. Doesn't matter how much you love the training or the system that you got to be a part of. I was a very rebellious young person, had a lot of issues. I did not respect authority very much. And yet, on the other side of that coin was a deep vulnerability and insecurity about who I was and about stepping into my own power because there was a lot of fear around that. And because of sort of the intensity of that energy that I carried at times, I received a lot of messages that were that needed to be controlled. And so when I stepped into grad school, which was in my late 20s or 27, right around a famed astrological period of time called the Saturn return. I had gone through a lot of changes, and though I still carried that lineage of sort of rebelliousness and doing things my way, I had a lot of fear and insecurity. So it played out in both ways. Like I totally got indoctrinated. I was very interested in, I trained in psychoanalysis and then attachment theory. And so, you know, I wanted to be the best. So that was my ego. I did very well. And I just pursued these to the nth degree so I could be so heavily this thing, this identity, like this Harry Potter sorting hat of like, I'm this, you know, I wanted that identity. While at the same time, the other parts of me were always peeking through. Like I always took what supervisors said with a grain of salt. I always pushed back. I did not always get the best performance reviews because of that. But so it was this, for me, it was this wrestling, this inner wrestling that was huge for my growth because I had like thrown myself into this world. And then when I reached, you know, the so-called peak or pinnacle and was just still unsatisfied and still getting sick all the time, you know, this was like 10 years into my pain journey, it was like, oh, now I'm guided to like shed some of these layers and let and see if I can let go. And that included like leaving a therapist that I had a that was personally, and then leaving a clinic and leaving a title. So it was getting indoctrinated and coming out that was like brutal and freeing. And just like you said, like I wasn't like a big social media person, but I was always a big sharer. And, you know, the way I was trained was like, in sort of the termination, which is such a weird jargony word for like ending a relationship with clients. It was like, don't even tell them that you'd like to see them again. Just let them. I was like, all right, maybe I would. I don't know. You know, is this the end forever? And I would share. I had a reputation for sort of sharing more about myself and not always deflecting. And then it came to that place where I was like, yeah, I'm actually, and it was from the invitation through the mind-body world that I had some evidence of people doing it differently. One of those people was Dan Ratner, who I got to know, and just, you know, that outside level of support that was like, I could reveal myself. I could tell my story. And it turns out that is so aligned for me to just be, and because my journey continues to change so much, who I am continues. If people see me as a therapist, that's great. But to be honest, I don't even necessarily use that word for myself. So, I love that your journey has involved its own path of getting free, of journeying into these different realms, of not letting this become you, because it's nothing is going to be you for you.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things I related to in the story about yourself that you're telling. And just one of them is like, Yeah, I had a rebellious streak in me already before I entered grad school. But also, I was also influenced in, you know, like I said, fear had a significant role in like the wanting to or thinking I needed to conform to some textbook idea of what a therapist is and not sharing anything about myself personally. And one of the things that opened up my mind and lessened my fear about sharing more of myself as a practitioner was listening to Nicole Sachs's podcast, because yeah. she shares very much about herself. And when I was binging her podcast was when I was early in my pain journey, and I was listening to it, you know, for my own pain recovery. And I found that her sharing about herself was so helpful to me. So yeah, that had an influence on me.
Yeah, she is someone who is so out there, so vulnerable. And, you know, it does seem to be, at least for some, an aspect of this mind-body work, because for most individuals, the way we are guided to it is through personal experience. So yeah. to deny that and deny the public that, to deny clients that, is kind of limiting the an aspect of the conviction that others can have for themselves and just a trust. So the people that end up coming to me know a bit about my story, or know a lot about my story, because at this point I'm pretty out there and open, and the journey has gone in many different ways. And I appreciate that. I don't need to be a blank slate. I never was. And no one really is. Although I can, you know, it's not for me to say. I honor where I am on the spectrum. I honor where other people are on the spectrum. There can be certainly a benefit and a use for a more sort of quote unquote neutral frame if that aligns with someone's personality, if they're not feeling constricted or limited by that. That might be a sense of freedom for them. So I can honor that. It wasn't for me.
Absolutely. And I similarly, like, I think different things work for different clients, different things work for different practitioners. And that's the beauty of like the diversity of all of us. But for me, I sort of see, like, you know, I don't want to like necessarily tell clients stuff about myself that's going to like then burden them and preoccupy them with my stuff that I'm working through. But in terms of not being a blank slate and sharing some of my personal biases about this work, I think it's offering them a consensual relationship with me. You know, like if my biases don't really mesh with theirs, then I think it's worthwhile for them to know that about me so they can choose somebody else. Or if they do vibe with my vibe, then that's great.
Yeah, I think that it resonates a lot with how I show up, because I am not objective and I don't claim to be. And of course, it's always a dance about learning how not to burden. And, you know, the truth is when I'm actually, you know, meeting with people, I'm not talking so much about myself, but outside of that, what they can find is plentiful. Yeah. And they may ask me about it, or they may ask me about my podcast, whatever. And then I will discern, you know, as we all do, what is appropriate. But I also, you know, I have a perspective. And at this point, you know, my perspective has this, what I would call spiritual component, which is a messy word, but it's a pretty big part of the way I see the world. And so if people aren't open to that, then they're not necessarily, you know, they're not necessarily going to be ready to receive what I have to give. And that's okay. I think when I left my clinic, I came to a very clear realization that, like, we're not meant to work with everybody. We're meant to work with the people who are meant to receive what we have to give. And that's great.
Yeah. And that's like more conducive to a healing relationship, I think. Yeah. When I was in grad school, myself and the other students were certainly given messages like, you know, you should be able to work with anyone. And I just, personally, I disagree with that. And I don't think I have the expertise to work with anyone. I think that my personal experience and knowledge is well suited to certain clients, not to all clients.
Yeah. And I certainly feel I have a pretty good range. And I'm really grateful for the experiences I had, which pushed me in grad school to work with a variety of people that I never would have thought, and discover things about myself in working with people that I never would have thought to. And just learning about my capacities, you know, to like, by the end, I was working with high conflict divorce couples, which is not something I would have like thought like, oh, I'd be good at, but I was actually pretty good at it in a different way, and really young kids, like, which is again, not something I liked kids, but it wasn't something I thought, you know, I'm going to be on the ground with like a 4-year-old. Like, so I had these experiences that were so enriching to me, and my body was communicating some things about, you know, in certain working with certain, you know, populations, and so just certain experience, particularly with kids, I was getting sick a lot, and there's just a lot of different emotional dynamics that were coming up for me there. And so, and I actually love kids and working with kids still, but I just got to see that, like, I had a bit more agency in this to go toward my, and I had a responsibility to go toward my highest light. We don't often get, we're not often encouraged to like go toward our highest passion in the idea that like our work can be passion filled, as if, as if that would be some selfish thing and you should just be of service and then burn out like everyone else in the field that you know and just keep doing it anyway. And I was like, no, this has to be passion filled because I'm not going to survive it if it's not. So yeah, there's just a lot of freedom in pursuing your, what really lights you up, and what you find is that you have a lot to give from that place and wherever you land in that way.
And I also think one of the, like, to me, an important discovery that has become apparent to me in my own healing journey, and it seems to happen for clients of mine as well, is that part of the matrix of stuff that gets us into a place where our body is sending out these like alarm bells of chronic symptoms is a lot of us were raised in some way to think that life needs to be hard and a struggle. And, you know, in certain ways, struggles and hardship cannot be avoided in life, but to like intentionally seek out, you know, I've got to do work that's like such a stretch for me that I feel just really spread too thin, or, you know, pulled too far outside of my comfort zone, when in fact, like, it can be a wonderful thing to do the thing that's just kind of comes naturally to you.
And it's a huge aspect of what of the healing arts. And I use that phrase intentionally, healing arts, because it can be like art. It can be artistic. It doesn't have to be so, you know, academic and rigid and effortful, which is what I see, and I believe it's changing, but was a huge component of traditional clinical training, was just working 50, 60 hours a week with just being in a room with person after person after person, like not seeing the light of day, like not, like it was just a weird world that I stepped into that I was like, I don't know if I can exist in this environment. And this idea that we can really, we can get free, we can pursue, because yes, we cannot avoid suffering in the human condition, but we also don't have to limit our possibility to choose if we have it. Yeah. You know, privilege is something that's talked a lot about. It's talked a lot about in my training, in understanding cultural competence, and I have a lot of privileged identities, and yet, you know, I often found that to use the word privilege, it had this really negative connotation, like you almost shouldn't have it. But if you have the privilege to choose a life that is filled with more passion, you should fucking do it, because that's going to be of service to the world. Like, you just keeping yourself down, being like, no, I don't want to be privileged. I want to have to work really hard and suffer just like other people do. Like, well, you know, that's not really contributing a whole lot more to the world. If you got to step into your privilege and own it, your privilege to be happy, to live an impassioned life, you get to model and create a path for others to do it. So, I agree. And, I love where this conversation has gone. I will now shift into something that may feel a little more familiar to you as a question, which is which is, what was your invitation or access way into the world of mind-body medicine?
Yeah, I like how you phrased that. I also use that word, invitation. And in my journey with mind-body stuff, the invitation that spoke to me loudly enough for me to actually respond to the invitation,
yes,
was because there were other invitations.
Oh, there are subtler invitations. Yes,
certainly anyone who experiences chronic symptoms can relate to. But the invitation that I could not ignore was frequent migraine attacks. And specifically, because I've told this story many times, but I experienced my very first migraine attack on my first day of my first job in reality television, which made it abundantly clear to me that it was stress related. But that first attack certainly was not an invitation loud enough for me to like even recognize it as an invitation. And I continued to experience migraine attacks after that first one sporadically over the decade that I worked in television. They became progressively more frequent over the years. However, it was not until I left television and I went to grad school that the migraine attacks became frequent enough and like kind of, you know, ruining my life basically enough for me to wake up to that invitation. It wasn't until then that I was then having to like, I couldn't reliably show up at my clinical internship or at my classes. I mean, it's not like I was missing all of them, but I was missing enough of them that I thought, how on earth am I going to have a private practice as a therapist? Because that's what I wanted to do after school. When I'm canceling on clients and I cannot be a reliable presence for them, that's not going to work professionally. And so, yeah, I think it was, you know, it was already intruding into my personal life prior to that. But I think it wasn't until the migraine attacks were threatening the viability of my new career. That's when I paid attention.
Yeah. And so as we were sort of touching on the nature of identities and diversity, was this something that you kept hidden, or were there spaces that you felt you could share openly about what you were going through at this time?
I did not keep it hidden at all. I never sensed any reason to keep it hidden. In fact, it seemed important that I tell people why I was missing a class, or, you know, I needed to have an excuse. I mean, that was the excuse, but I needed folks to know I wasn't simply not showing up because I didn't care, because I was flaky, you know, so I would tell them I'm having a migraine attack.
Yeah. And the reason I ask is because for me, similar to you, my more explicit invitation, many invitations, but more explicit invitation began shortly after college, and I was working in a stressful environment. I was working in schools, and so it was like 5 more years or so before I ended up transitioning to graduate school. And because the label I had was chronic fatigue syndrome, and it was a much more diffuse kind of experience that was, you know, there's something about more acute symptoms, yes, where it's like migraine, people are like, okay, I know what that means. But when your whole body is like on fire and in pain, and you don't, and it ebbs and flows, and you don't really even know what you're, because the label is pretty nonsensical in my mind. I wrote my dissertation on it and, you know, the etiology of these things and how we come up with these labels for these more widespread pain and fatigue experiences is like, it just doesn't even scratch the surface of what's happening to your body. At that, probably if it started to happen in grad school, I would have, but after 5 years, like I was tired of telling people and my ego was like, I don't want to be, you know, because the therapy world, it can be very, it's this juxtaposition when you're training where it's very sensitive and empathetic. And yet if you're training to be a doctorate, it's empathetic to a point where it's like, oh, well, you're no longer qualified. Like if you were to reveal you had like a personality disorder or something, it's like, oh, that's cool, but we don't think you should do this, you know, which is on some levels understandable. But for me, I was like, you know, nothing is going to threaten my path. So I didn't really speak a ton about it, which actually made some of the conversations around privilege and things like that challenging for me, because I was like, you don't know what's going on inside me. Wow. And so I hid that for a bit.
That sounds so stressful to have to hide it.
It was an interesting time. It was also a time where I had, you know, I was a big drug user in my early 20s and a big partier. So I had shifted. I was, you know, and I wasn't really open about like sobriety and the other things that I was stepping in. You know, there was a lot to my journey that I was not sharing. You know,
and
I could
concealment is a huge trigger for symptoms.
Yeah. You know? I mean, and just shame, you know, just my life, like, you know, that sense of feeling hidden and showing up. And I could be very astute, you know, I did very well in graduate school and people would look at me and, you know, be like, this guy knows what he's talking about. But on the inside, I was like, I'm a mess, man. I don't even know, like, I don't know how I'm going to be able to like live my life moving forward. So there was a lot going on. Then, you know, toward the end of my program, I became, and as I was learning more about trauma, as I was in my more trauma-focused therapy, like, I started to feel a bit safer. And so I could share more openly by the time I got to my internship and things like that. But again, it's a dance, because like, sharing with people who don't have a more explicit understanding, they'd be like, oh, you have this diagnosis. Okay, we'll be like sympathetic to how you manage this. And I was like, no,
right?
I'm not managing this. I'm healing this and I don't need anything to threaten my powers. So it's this tricky game of like, you know, when people, you know, like family included, like they want to like check in and, you know, it can be sympathetic, but it was threatening to my power because that's just kind of in my nature. And so my attachment style and all trauma and all of that was I had a difficult relationship with sympathy. So I ask because I danced a lot with how I revealed that part of myself.
So this is really interesting to me, and it actually brings a second layer to my answer to this question, because what you shared it makes so much sense to me. I feel like, oh yeah, I get that. And chronic fatigue, you know, if that, like, I know now at this point in our journeys, we're like, we don't love the diagnosis names, in general, but
it got to the point where like, I would tell my family not to use that name I was like, that's not who, you know, it's like, it's like changing other kinds of identities. I was like, that's not me anymore.
Yes. That's not my name. That song. Exactly. Bringing in my pop culture references, but I think it seems to me that those symptoms are far less understood than like a migraine attack. However, I have learned, been humbled to learn through my engagement with social media, that for a lot of people who suffer from chronic migraine, like they have people minimizing their experience, telling them, oh, whatever, it's just a headache, just take an Advil, it's not a big deal, or I get a headache and I just power through. And I feel lucky that that was never my experience. I don't know why, but for whatever reason, the environments that I was in, anyone, you know, whether it was when I was working in television or when I was in grad school, whenever I would say, oh, I'm getting a migraine attack, folks would say, oh my gosh, I get them too. I'm so sorry. Like, do whatever you need to do. So I was lucky in that sense. But I do also relate to the concealment experience, because of course, underneath the migraine attacks was emotional stuff that was going on. And it was much easier for me, you know, because the environments I was in did respect the migraine attack, it was easier for me to say I'm having a migraine attack. Was a lot, felt a lot less comfortable and less safe to talk about the emotional stuff that was driving that. And so there was a lot of concealment actually going on that level for me.
Yeah. And these are, you know, these are the many layers or levels of the game, right? Like, it was for me, even though I don't mean to make it seem like I was in grad school so long ago, because I wasn't, but even the time that I was in it, like, trauma focused was not, even though when you start to understand the literature and stuff, it was like the 90s, but people were not talking, you were not getting trained. Even like I had very well respected clinicians and professors be like, oh yeah, I don't know that much about trauma. To say that today would be, you would fall off your chair. You'd be like, I don't even understand. You know, are you living under a rock? You know, but it would be like, no, there's like psychoanalysis. There's like, you know, all that ridiculous jargon that we learn in that language. And then there's diagnoses, and like trauma was like one. And then you're like, actually, maybe it's all. So
I'm so glad we're talking about this, because I think a lot of folks who are not, you know, who are not professional mental health practitioners don't know this. They think that anyone with the title of therapist is a trauma specialist and has learned about trauma. And I thought that too. And actually, this ties into my theory about why the migraine attacks got worse instead of better when I left the high stress field of television. I thought they were going to subside because I was actually learning about trauma and somatic experiencing before I went to grad school. I was working with a somatic experiencing therapist for 10 years, starting when I was in TV. I had begun, I'd already begun taking the somatic experiencing training before I started grad school. And so I thought, I'm going to go to grad school and it's going to be like all about feelings, and it's going to be so safe to like have my emotions and be open about them, and the migraines are going to go away. But it was so not that experience. There was one elective course on trauma. There was only one course on trauma in grad school, and it was an elective. So you didn't have to take it. You know, I took it, of course, but, and it's not to say that there weren't many professors who were, you know, trauma informed and more progressive, but there were plenty who weren't, you know, and it's nothing about them personally. It's just that the field is very behind the times, and there was a lot of pathology based talk, and I actually felt in some ways even less safe with my emotions in grad school, because this is such a weird analogy, but what just popped into my head is I'm culturally Jewish, but I wasn't really raised religious. Yeah, I figured.
You thought so.
Recognize that. And so when I go into a space, like a religious Jewish space, in some ways, I feel this kinship. It's like this sense of belonging. And in some ways, I feel like even more of an outsider because I don't know the rules of my own group. And so it was like in grad school, I felt like this was supposed to be the place where I felt safest. So my pump was so primed to like be emotionally vulnerable. I felt like this balloon of emotion was like, had just like inflated to the point of bursting in anticipation of getting there and feeling safe. But when I got there, I didn't feel so safe. And so this big inflated balloon just popped basically with all these migraine attacks.
Firstly, that is the perfect analogy to use for me because it is so resonant. I mean, my dad was interested in Buddhist philosophy, and then my mom got into this, into the a very different aspect of the spiritual world and energy healing and all of that. So my Judaism was very, and I just, again, I was a very resistant kid. Like I, you know, I got bar mitzvah, and just it's in my nature. Like I did really well. I had a great singing voice, and I was like, okay, great, never doing this again. And just like wasn't interested at all. Like at all. Yeah. And I was I I've sort of reflected on this. I think I was sort of an inherently spiritual person even before I knew what that meant. I just had this sense that this experience of life was bigger than we know. And I was a very emotion-driven person. I was very, which is why I struggled a lot. But then, you know, it can become a strength and a power because seeing the world through that lens actually allows you a lot more freedom when you're less connected to some of the more physical density of things. But for those reasons, I was like, no, this doesn't light me up. Am I supposed to like just be this identity? I don't know. Yeah, it's my lineage. I get it. Like, and I've come to appreciate it, how it impacts me. But yeah, it's that, you know, and I also received a lot of psychiatric diagnoses as a kid and didn't care for any of those either. So, you know, it was for me, I just kind of knew inherently where I was on the spectrum of like labels. Like, I wasn't super interested in being the one giving them, even though, again, just like we were speaking to revealing ourselves, like I see where I am on the spectrum, and others can work in that realm of labels and compartmentalization and sort of understanding someone's experience from that way and do that very well. I'm interested in freedom. Like, that's my nature. It's why I'm here. And so it's like, that's a huge component. And yes, it, just like you said, it would be hard for people to understand that, like, there are influencers on social media who know more about trauma than people who have been through 5 years of a doctorate program, because it just, you get, again, it's that ego of academia. Like, it's not necessarily wanting to do harm or intentionally wanting to dig your head in the sand, but if you've been trained and you've been in the field for 50 years or whatever, like, it's going to be a little difficult for you to shift and for you to suddenly start to disregard all that you've come to speak about and maybe become well known about because of your publications and your books and your classes and whatever. Like, it takes a lot to shift. And so, yeah, there were, and again, even outside of that, even just from practical being, which we both experienced in stepping into how we wanted to serve, like, there was just so much messaging about, you can't even have a private practice these days, and you can't even, it's like, dude, what do you know about the world? Like, I'm sorry, but you are not the most predictive force that you think you are about, you know, the nature of reality and how healing is developing. So there was so much that, you know, I and many others were certainly vulnerable to as you're giving your power over to these institutions and getting something from it. But yeah, as an emotion-based person, I could sound pretty smart talking a lot about emotions, but there was a lot I was not feeling, and there was a lot I was not being guided to feel. And it's amazing that you were introduced to this somatic experiencing, because as you can see, a lot of these lineages, I mean, they've existed for hundreds of years, let alone decades, but not necessarily in the public eye, not necessarily in more traditional forms of training. And yeah, maybe there was one elective on trauma if you were lucky, and then it went, but because it was an elective, it was sort of pigeonholed as this one thing you could study a little bit about. Mm-hmm. And then it was really through my work, through my personal growth outside of school, that I started to see and had my own ideas. Like, I just still remember I was working with this. She was a psychoanalyst, but she was very trauma focused and she was trained in somatic experiencing, but still had her own ideas about the work, which is why I eventually had to leave. But at a certain point, just listening to her speak, I was like, wait, so everyone's traumatized, right? Like, that, I just came to this idea that, like, wait, so, because, you know, from my perspective, we don't, you know, there's a lot that happens in this life, but we don't come in as blank slates either. You know, there's epigenetics, there's lineages, and my view extends even beyond that. So I just had this waking up, like, oh, everyone has trauma. It doesn't look always super dramatic and acute like everyone else's, but like, everyone's, it doesn't even make sense that you would be so-called trauma free. And then, and my pursuit then became like, what does this word mean? Like, what, because it's used so much. And that's the other side of the coin, is when it gets so popularized. It's like, oh, trauma, 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 trauma. It's like, okay, but what is that? I don't, what do you mean by it? You know? So I have my own view of it that I simplify because I think simpler is helpful. But yeah, there was that. And to bring it back to the understanding of that mind-body connection, that was the invitation for me to just really start scratching the surface. Because it, you know, as you likely know, coming out of pain just creates opportunity for the next invitation to keep going and to keep peeling back layers as it has been the case for me. But yeah, to start doing that work, which you might think like, what a cool profession, you get to grow personally like within the field. But you know, again, that same thing about concealment, it was like, I kind of had to grow outside of it because the aspect of it that I was in had a particular way that you grow. Like, yeah, you get a therapist, probably an analytic therapist, because I was in that area. And when I left that, I was like, you know, the healing world is a lot bigger than we think or that we conceive of from this traditional clinical diagnostic perspective. And that was my power and freedom to just start doing like what actually worked for me, not just what I thought was expected for me to do. Because I had plenty of peers who like tried one form of therapy and then was like, yeah, not for me, but still pursued the path of becoming a clinician. I was like, man, if it's not for you, like you probably want to keep going because healing is seemingly for you. And it doesn't really work where you just get to, you know, be the purveyor of that and then not really find it for yourself. But I empathized because I had a similar experience of being frustrated and disappointed in certain forms of therapeutic work where I either just blamed myself or I thought I was too traumatized or whatever. And I needed the freedom to like, keep going, keep seeking. You can find what you're looking for.
Yeah. I have a very political opinion about why trauma is not, why the trauma lens is not more accepted or prevalent in the kind of mainstream grad schools. And my opinion about it or my theory is that if we truly take a trauma lens to, you know, emotional distress and physical distress, what we uncover is that a lot of trauma comes from hierarchy. It comes from, you know, occupying a marginalized identity in a society that just steps on you in all these various ways. And marginalized identities, you know, when we say that, we can think, well, okay, you know, I'm looking at you. You present as like a white man. So then where does the trauma come from? There's all different kinds of complexities in there. And also, each one of us has occupied the marginalized identity of child, where you've got like no right to consent or autonomy in this society, the way that, you know, or the society that I know is set up. We've all experienced in, you know, different ways, but we've all experienced being stepped on by that hierarchy and having our needs and feelings not matter. And I think when you start to uncover that, it starts to unravel a lot of the hierarchy that's embedded in our academic institutions. And, you know, that can be very threatening to that structure. So I'm probably going off on a tangent here, but that's kind of one of my soapboxes.
Tangents are welcome here. This is a space of freedom. We don't have an assigned agenda here. And no, it's important. It's important because yeah, institutions are attempting to survive in their own way, just like corporations are attempting to survive different structures. But yeah, if we can't start to peel back those layers and like the systems of power, which like you said, are more complex than they appear, because on one level, I appear like someone who has a lot of power. And then what?
As do I should say. I mean, to single you out.
No, it's fair, because what you realize is that if we start to understand the true nature of trauma, that it is like the roots of a tree and it expands throughout the collective from which we all come. That like no one is escaping this. Like, and that like the more power you have, like, you know, you got some shadows too. Like it doesn't like it doesn't really work that the most powerful people are the healthiest people. In fact, it rarely works that way. So when you really start to peel it back, you're like, wow, everyone comes from somewhere and everyone. And there are things, and this is why it was particularly challenging for me, personally going through some of the diversity training in my program, because I had a lot of unprocessed shame. And then on the surface, it's like, oh yeah, the white guilt and things like that. But there were things I didn't even know about my early trauma and things that had happened to me. There was just a lot that I didn't know, which I think is the case for a lot of people. And I was working with all the pain, there was a concealment, and so it's tricky. It's tricky work. And again, there's political biases. There's so many different biases that get wrapped up in let's call it the healing arts, but just in life in general, when you start to unpack these things. But when you pull back the layers and you go within, you see that like it's all of it, in the sense that it's external and it's internal. Like it's external, then you bring it back to the personal and you go into the layers within and you understand the hierarchies within and the parts within. And it's essential. It's just essential as I see it, to grow and to heal and to get free. And can you be a good clinician in one context, or can you be a good professor in one context without peeling back all those layers or continuing to grow? For sure, you can stop at a certain point, but you only, at least from my perspective, you only can only give what you have and where you've gone and where you're continuing to go. Like, that's just kind of the name of the game as I see it. And we are at a very messy and ungrounded time collectively, because a lot of institutions are starting to reshape. And I feel that they're starting to crumble for a reason, because we are stepping into a new paradigm of reality, let alone healing, let alone anything else.
Yeah. And you know, this brings me back to your speaking right at the beginning of our conversation about how we first connected. And your memory is the same as mine, that we first connected through the PPD listserv or TMS listserv of practitioners. And what I remember about, I don't remember why I think you responded to me about something. I don't remember what it was. What I do remember is that I saw on your website at the time, which has probably evolved since then, that you, although you had a PsyD, which I was very impressed by, because I don't have a PsyD. And I was like, oh, he's really like, he's establishment. And then I saw on your website that you don't practice under your license, and that I think you were calling your work at the time guided self-help. Is that accurate?
It's, oh man, it's evolved so much, but you were poking at something that's very important and was a very crucial part of my journey. Because you work, like you said, when you're in that doctorate program, like everyone's working for that title and those letters.
Yeah.
And something was happening to me, you know, in service of my true freedom and expansion, which was, I got that, and then you have to study for this grueling, truly horrendous test. And I studied for like 4 months and I passed, and it was like very emotional. And everyone at my clinic was like super proud of me. And in that moment, I was like, because it was almost like this hibernation period where I had contorted my life to pass this exam. And during that process, it's like I was cocooned, and I was waking up really early and doing all these things. And when I came out of that cocoon, I was starting to be a butterfly, but it wasn't in the way of this. I just quickly knew, I was like, oh, this isn't for me. And it was such a weird and jarring time because I was finally sort of being celibate. I was about to like get a raise at the clinic, all this stuff. I was like at this point where you work for so long to get. And I had this inner knowing because this other kind of intuition and working with other healers. And I was starting to heal the pain, which, you know, one thing about pain is like, it will, as horrific as it is, it will help you see through the illusion of everything else in your life. Because when that starts to heal, it doesn't matter what you have earned, you will go toward that. And so it was like, oh, I'm just not going to do this anymore because I'm healing doing these other things. So like, why the hell would I keep doing this? And, but it was very challenging. I was also talking about things that were very outside the box for people. And it was kind of like, oh yeah, you can't work here anymore. Basically. I was like, yeah, I know. And it was for the best. It was good. But so when I left, there was this huge identity crisis. Cause I was like, psychology, am I? And so when you reached out to me, it was very personal. Cause I was like, am I a psychologist? I don't know. And so I kind of played with this around like, no, I don't think I'm going to do this at all. Like, I wanted to do the, you know, I'm a healer on one level. Like I was always going to serve. So I was like, I'll just be a trauma healer, you know, and I started like calling myself that. But then I was like, you know, I was just stepping out. I was a newborn in this sort of alternative healing space. And that is rife with its own issues. That is not uncomplicated. That totally is, you know, social media has certainly has its own shadows and people who are more entrepreneurial and coaches and just, there was a world I was so unexposed to because, you know, in a clinic, it has a lot of its issues, but people pretty much just come to you if you take insurance. Like there's not a whole lot of business ego around it which can be problematic for some, but stepping into that, I was like, oh, this is different. And then seeing that, you know, calling yourself a healer had a lot of weird connotations and power. Right. And I was like, okay, so I did something that is still to this day, a very gray area, you know, I was meeting with attorneys. And at a certain point, I just had this intuitive knowing that like, I don't care. I trust in spirit. Like it's all gonna be fine. So I call myself an intuitive psychologist. You know, the psychologist is almost like a brand at this point. It's an academic title. So I earn the title, but I don't use my license. So I technically practice as like a consultant or a coach. And even now it's, you know, there's aspects of it that are getting way weirder. So
I remember now why we first connected. This conversation is bringing it back. And the reason how we first connected is I put up a post or, you know, an email on that listserv talking about how I was at the time still working toward my license, but I wanted to offer coaching as well. Yes. It was something about that. And I was, and, you know, talking about like the fear is like, oh, but the legalities and am I going to get in trouble?
You got all these fear-based responses, I recall.
Oh yeah. I actually don't remember those. I remember your response and you reached out and I was like, well, he's got a PsyD. So he knows about all the boogaboo about, you know, oh, you can't be a coach as well as a licensed professional and he's doing it. So I'm going to do it too.
Yeah. I don't know if I was exactly the person to follow because of what you thought, but I
honestly, all I needed was to know that like another human being was doing this and like brimstone was not exploding their life.
And,
you know?
And that's, I remember that's why I was guided to reach out to you because I saw the plethora of responses that you were getting, which are reasonable and rational minded, but there was a lot of fear there and people just like, well, this is what happened when I met with an attorney and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to show her a way that, you know, and Dan Ratner was someone who was, because he's so much about individual power and he would say that he technically uses his license, but he was also just like, yeah, but I don't even care about it. Like, it's just not like it, like go do your thing. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. And again, I just needed one person to be like, you can do this. You can do this. And I, you know, and I think maybe we were emailing, like I had a whole disclaimer written up. I had a whole, you know, all this kind of stuff, but like, it just came down to like, on some level, All of these are conditions that were just set in place by institutions and authorities created by people that actually under the surface, turns out they don't have that much authority. Turns out half of them aren't that ethical. Turns out the institutions are outdated and changing anyway. Turns out that you can't meet with people across state lines. Turns out that no one knows what the hell they're doing anyway. So like, I just
we're
got
all just
so-
people. Oh, yeah. Sorry, we have a visitor, my cat.
Oh, love it. Turns out that like, at least for me, COVID was this time where, amidst other forms of distress and everything, it was this time where I was like, this is the time for me to get free. This is the time for me to recognize, to take a step back. And actually, because it was similar to what you had said, the true invitation was like, I got my license, but I was ready to start doing some stuff on my own. And I wanted, my ego wanted to have the safety of like, well, I'll have stuff of my own, but I'll still be at the clinic. And then, you know, sort of universal will intervened and they were like, yeah, this is like not appropriate what you're trying to do. So I was like, you're right. I don't want to be here anyway. And, but it was going to be months before I could actually use the license, you know, it just a delayed process. And I was like, I'm not like, well, that's crazy. I'm not waiting. So I was just like, oh, I'll just be a coach. Turns out you can just be a coach, and, you know, and I'm, and are there issues with that? 100%. But there was also a huge, there was huge possibility in that. And I work with people all over the world and I, love it. And I still work virtually a lot of the time and it just allowed me to do things that I didn't think were possible.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, yeah, that is why I reached out to you. And I've since heard, I think, you know, the coaching thing has just been exploding. And like you said, there's issues with every, like, you know, you can have great experiences in therapy. You can have creepy ones. You can have great experiences in coaching and, you know, otherwise. But I think that it seems to me like the majority of folks that I know of, particularly in the mind body chronic pain space, are doing coaching in addition to, you know, either they've abandoned their, you know, the work they do under their license, or they're doing both, or, and this spans not just therapists, but also I know of physicians in our field who are working as coaches so they can work with clients all over the world. And I just think it's awesome, liberating. And like, it so comes back to me to like, fear is not healing and fear exacerbates symptoms. And if we are operating our professional businesses as practitioners from a place of fear, that's coming into our work, you know?
100%. And I could see it. Even though, like, I was always pushing the boundaries, let's say on the listserv, let alone in my, you know, field, like, and now the kinds of things that I talk about, it's like not even totally appropriate, just because it's really out there. But at the time, you know, you and I were doing that. Now I could see even it was, you know, medical doctors who talk about, you know, a really boxed in title. Like the idea of the threat, the perceived fear and threat of practicing outside that. And yet I saw people just create, you know, John Strax is someone I know and creating an integrative practice, you know, where now they got coaches, now they got this. And I'm just like, yeah, dude, good for you, because this is the way. Like this is, we are pushing outside the bounds and we can, and I'm glad that there are still, I say this a ton. I'm glad that there are still people who are not necessarily like me, because we don't need everyone to be like me. And there are people like Dave Clark, who's like, no, this is what the research says. And I love people like that. And people like Howard Schubiner, who are like, you know, they work from within, you know, and that's great. I work from without. And so it takes all of us. And, but yeah, it is slowly creeping. At the time that I, you know, left my clinic, you know, people would snub their nose at social media and all kinds of stuff. But now I'm sure that a lot of people, you know, that I parted ways with and relationships and supervisors are probably checking out, you know, tons of people on social media because, there's a shadow side and a light side to everything, but it doesn't really privilege one over the other just because one, yes, there have been helpful boundaries within certain fields, but there have also been a lot of issues. And there have been, there's been a lot of freedom outside of that, which has its own problems, but also positives. And so it's that integration. Yeah. That's the world.
Yeah. I love that. I also love that there's just, you know, we're all over the map in terms of how we're approaching things, and that those collective similarities and differences lead to a lot of interesting evolution.
I say this all the time. Like, I am in along the spectrum of whatever spectrum this is. I am in the camp of possibilities. I'm just here to explore what the possibilities are for this life, because I am not going to be put in a box. And that's just me. That's just my nature. Do I have things to learn? And do I cross the line? Sure. Plenty. But knowing your nature is super important, because just because you get yourself into murky waters doesn't mean you should become something that you're not. And I had to learn that. The so-called hard way, but it was my way. So
yeah, there. I, when you said, like, you know, some people snub their noses at social media in mental health, and I was thinking, yeah, I really learned a great, or got like a great and useful experience when I left the world of architectural journalism, which is pretty snooty, and went into reality TV, and was, you know, had to experience the shame of the perceptions of my, you know, not all, but some of my former coworkers. But it was so liberating on the other side of that. And those perceived losses that sometimes keep us from exploring something new and different, they're oftentimes much smaller, or sometimes they just turn out to be nothing in comparison to the gains of exploring something new and expanding.
Because our social judgment and bias feels so big and is in reality so small. And yet there is nothing that invites you to get freer than doing something that brings on social judgment, which I've done quite a bit of recently. And where, especially in intimate relationships, like with family, like, is it challenging? Yes. Will it support you in getting free? Yes, because judgment isn't truth. It's just not. It's usually based in fear. And so, I support you in having those kinds of experiences as well. So this conversation has been amazing. I'm just looking at the time, and I want to be respectful. So I will just ask one final question and see where that goes, and then we'll begin to wrap up here, which is, now to bring it back to this mind-body community, let's call it. You kind of were alluding to the different ways people refer to it. You know, there was TMS, and then people were like, oh, well, that's not even really true. It's just something Sarno said. And then there's PPD, and then there's... So again, it's the unfolding and expanding of labels, and to be honest, my journey has taken me to a place where I relate to the community at a distance a little bit. Like, I love connecting with the people who, you know, who are a part of it in some way, but I don't, you know, it will be no surprise, I don't really identify as like a TMS person, because I don't really identify so much as anything. I'm there's just a lot more in my experience that goes on. Do I absolutely value the mind-body connection? 100%. I just don't necessarily, have not necessarily needed this frame, or again, the label of, even though it can be a better label than some, the label of TMS, PPD, whatever, psychophysiologic. Like, I was just like, I'm not sure I need that label either. I think we can work from within that or outside of it. And so that's just been my journey. But again, people are all along the spectrum of that and relating to it. And there's been this boom in people who, you know, love it and have come into the work and, you know, started reading some of the material and, you know, are more specifically like mind-body practitioners and things like that, which is great. So I just wanted to ask you, like, how has your relationship to that field changed at all? Is it the same as when you first discovered it? Is it still, would you consider the biggest aspect of how you serve and sort of your identity as a clinician, or how does it look for you now?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I haven't thought about that question yet, probably because like I still feel like in many ways this is a new and exciting world for me. Like I, similar to you, I've kind of entered many different worlds along the way and then kind of like sort of not outgrew them in the sense of like I think they're without merit anymore. It's just like, oh, this is now no longer my main thing and I'm moving on to another main thing. And the mind-body world is certainly my current main thing. But the way in which things have evolved, I guess I'd say that, you know, of course, when I first encountered this mind-body approach, that's just the term I use. I know there's like a million different terms out there, but it just seems like an easy shortcut for me.
But no one's is really necessarily better.
No, than and I actually really value that this field is in a period of time where there is not cohesiveness, and maybe that'll continue. I hope it does, because I think the lack of cohesiveness keeps things open. And so much of this work is finding your own way with it. It's, and I guess that's what's shifted for me as I think it shifts for, you know, any client or practitioner that goes through their own mind-body recovery experience, is that when you start out, you're looking for answers externally. And so you're reading all the books and like going to all the lectures and listening to all the experts. And that was just so instrumental in me like opening my mind to something new that I could not have imagined for myself on my own. And then where I think healing takes you is then turning inward and saying, okay, my mind's been open to all these possibilities. And the main possibility that it's opened me to is that my own inner voice is guiding my healing. And so I still love being connected with a community of folks who are both peers and other folks who I consider more like, you know, mentors, not because I've studied with them one-on-one, but just because I read their books and, you know, I've listened to their lectures. And I still may read a book here and there, but I don't binge the bookshelf anymore. I don't binge the podcasts anymore, because it just gives me more space to listen inwardly.
To access what is within you.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, when I left the clinic, the psychology clinic I was at, I was just looking around like, we have all these like, understandably important, like diversity groups, book groups, all kinds of things. But it was like every space was filled. And if you had a free moment, but I was like, but for me, because again, this is just my nature, I was like, where is my space to create? And no one else really, at least from my perception, was that interested in like, no, we'll just keep reading the theories and we'll be perpetual learners. And like, it's great to be a lifelong learner. But if it's just coming from this not enoughness,
right,
you yeah. know, of whatever it is, could be racial not enoughness, could be professional not enoughness, like there's always going to be things for you to learn. Like there's always going to be something for you, research paper for you to read. Like just when I was in psychoanalysis, like I never was going to know enough of that. Yeah. And so there was, it was at a certain point in my journey where I was like, no, I'm enough. I'm not going to keep up with all these book clubs because frankly, I don't care that much about yeah. them. And there's just other things that I need to do personally. I need to create, I need to see what is inside. And it's also, you know, like, so the mind body community is amazing, and you're right. It is. And it's still, it's so amazing. I think that it's still fresh and exciting for you, which it should be, which we should just do what is fresh and exciting for us. I am just someone who just, at least this is just how it's unfolded. I've just gone in all these kind of crazy directions. And it's also something in me that I've struggled with community. Like I've struggled with feeling a part of community. It's just part of my own conditioning. And I've always kind of, so I'm working with that feeling on the outskirts kind of thing. Yeah. And, you know, there's a part of that that is a shadow side. That is my personal work. But then there's also a part of that that is like, but, you know, be you. Like, keep going. And so I just I'm not leaving anything behind. It's all part of my world. My world just keeps growing in certain ways. And everyone, I think, deserves the opportunity to discover what they have to say.
Absolutely. And my goal for my clients, likewise, is for them to, you know, at the beginning, they're coming in a place of fear. And it's important for me to provide, you know, whatever guidance I have to provide. But the goal is not for them to be hanging on my guidance forever. It's to, you know, for them to connect with and trust their own guidance.
I feel one thing I feel very strongly about in relation to trauma, we can call it, and in all other forms of life, is no one heals by feeling disempowered. We heal by feeling empowered. And the way we feel empowered is by at some point recognizing that we too have something to give, that all these people we've put on pedestals may have served us, you know,
yes,
but at a certain point, you can step up to the same level as anyone else if you would like.
Yes.
So this may be a good point for us to start to wrap up this wonderful and expansive and free-flowing conversation, which I've thoroughly enjoyed.
Me too.
Good. So I will just ask you, Anna, if there's anything else at all that you'd like to share, and then if there's anything you'd like to share about where people can find you, if you'd like them to, and any upcoming things you're doing that you'd like to talk about.
Sure. Yeah. One thing I will share is that I believe that everybody and anybody who is listening or not listening is also enough. You know, it's
amen.
It's not just about reaching a place in, you know, whatever, in your education or your profession or your own healing journey. Like, the whole point is we are all and always have been enough. And it's coming home to that. And where people can find me is on Instagram, as we've spoken about. And my Instagram is Anna, A-N-N-A underscore Holtzman, H-O-L-T-Z-M-A-N. And folks can also find me on my website, which is annaholtzman.com.
Beautiful. And I encourage people to do so because it's very beautiful. Mm-hmm. Very well managed. And I will put all that in the show notes for people as well, so they can find that. And yeah, again, thank you so much, Anna, for doing this. It's really been an honor for me to get to know your really cool story a bit more and to have this conversation. So I'm really grateful.
Thank you so much for inviting me into this conversation. This is the kind of thing that just really lights me up, and it's been so fun to get to chat with you and get to know you and your perspective too.
Well, I'm all about doing things that light us up. So I'm glad it could be that for you as well. Because that's why I do this. I do this because it lights me up. So I support others in doing the same. And I'll look forward to connecting with you again soon, because I'm sure that we will.
Yeah, I look forward to that too. Thanks.
Okay, Anna. Talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. If you like the episode, please subscribe, leave a review, or head over to my Patreon page to become a member of the Be the Vessel community with exclusive monthly benefits and to connect with me directly. You may also find me on Instagram at DrDaniel_Atkins or through my website, DrDanielAtkins.com, where you can also subscribe to my newsletter to stay updated on all happenings. I'd love to hear from you. Until then, may you be the light, the frequency, and the vessel for your highest vision.